limited access to primary care physicians and limited access to dentists. So that's an area that I would look at. They're at the top of the list for a number of other things. Their premature death rate is quite low. Their the rate of babies being born less than 5 pounds, 8 ounces is low compared to the rest of the state. They're doing well as it relates to some social and economic factors, including high school graduation, and the community is safe. They've got a very low crime rate.
In the past, when you've come out with these rankings, have you noticed any trends?
Sure. There are several trends that we are noticing nationwide. So the rates of premature death are the lowest they've been in 20 years, and that's fantastic news. And then if folks want to get specific trend data on their particular county, they can visit our website and go into a particular county and look at trends in premature death, adult obesity, physical inactivity. Just for example, for Douglas County, the rates of premature death are continuing to decrease, and that's good news, and it's lower than the national average and lower than the state average. There are some other trends that aren't so great news, and we see these as opportunities for improvement. So there's been no improvement in childhood poverty rates since 2000, and more than 1 in 5 children in the U.S. live in poverty. That's a real issue. And as we look at our policies and programs that are out there, we need to make sure that all of our children have the opportunity to live a healthy and vibrant life. And that starts by creating healthy communities in which to live. So a healthy community looks like one that has access to affordable, healthy foods, has access to safe community recreation, has access to high-quality schools that help our children graduate from high school and go on and pursue a higher education degree. So those are some things that we're beginning to look at. The other thing that the rankings tell us is that because there are so many things that go into creating a healthy community, it takes all of us working together in a coordinated fashion, and that we all have a stake in improving the health of our neighborhoods, our schools, and our communities. So we need to work together to find solutions to improve our high school graduation rates, providing more walking paths, making sure that our communities are safe.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL, and for a longer interview, please visit us online at will.illinois.edu. What began as a small house in South London with just 3 residents has found its way to the U.S. nearly 60 years later. Abbey Field houses are intended as a kind of retirement community. They're designed to keep people from feeling isolated. Construction is nearly complete on the charity's first American home in the village of St. Joseph. Illinois Public Media's Jeff Bossert talked with Abbey Field International Director David Coe on a recent visit to the area.
What attracted me to Abbey Field really is, I think, if you go to an Abbey Field house, you just see what we like to call the Abbey Field ethos. And you see 10, 12 people who probably in their 70s, maybe in their 80s, the average age of entry is now in the 80s. But you just see them enjoying a form of living and a style of life that's really quite unique. They support each other, they eat their meals together, and there's so much research that backs up how bad loneliness is for people. It's a bigger killer than drinking heavily or smoking quite a few cigarettes every day. So, you know, you can really see that people who are socializing really do have a better standard of living. They eat well by definition of having 2 meals a day provided, and, you know, therefore they have a great final part of their life, perhaps, or chapter in their life.
And how does this differ from the retirement community you find in so many U.S. cities today?
I think probably in terms of scale. We visited about 3 complexes around St. Joseph area, and they probably had upwards of 100, 200, 300 residents in each. Some, you were talking about a walk of maybe, you know, sort of 10 minutes to get from your room to the communal dining area. Whereas in the generally, we have houses of 10, 12, now we go up to 16 or 20. But in every case, you're talking about a small little complex. Everybody knows each other. other. You can make some very close friendships. And again, you're always eating together and socializing together. So I think it's very much more of an intimate family style feel. So it's all about scale, really.
So that atmosphere lends itself to much more of a, you'll maybe wave hi to someone you know next door, but in this situation, you'll really get to know one another better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think, you know, the house manager, as we call them in the UK, I think you call them house mother over in these parts, really knows all the residents pretty intimately. And he or she, you know, really can cater for them on a very individual basis, which I just don't think you can do in a larger retirement complex.
So is St. Joseph really the first U.S. home? Will it become the first in the U.S.?
Yep, it'll be absolutely the first in the U.S.
And can you talk about how that came about and how much it was it the effort of people mm-hmm. around here and when you first found out about it?
Yeah, I think it's an incredible story, really, of devotion, stubbornness, and being very focused by a group of volunteers. I think it was started originally by Charlie and Mary Butso approximately 10 years ago. And despite all the sort of setbacks of not being able to get finance and then the financial crash, they stuck with the project. More recently, we've had changes of the chair of the St. Joe's group, but we've still got a very enthusiastic and cohesive group of people who are pushing this project and just have absolutely never let go at any moment when most of us would probably have thrown up our hands in horror and said, okay, you know, I give up on this thing.
Is anyone else in the U.S. looking at this now, or will you think St. Joe needs to get this mm-hmm. going so other people can see what they're missing out on?
Righty-ho. We have two little towns near St. Joe, Ogden and... I forget the name of the other one, actually. But they're very interested in starting up Abbeyfields nearby. And more we like to start at what we call a local cluster, which could be two or three Abbeyfield houses, then move on to a regional cluster. And that could be, you know, covering sort of the southern side of Illinois, up into the center of Illinois, for example. Then when you've got perhaps 10 or 15 Abbeyfield houses in an area, then we might even think about putting in a dementia care home or something of that nature as well. But the idea is that with a little local cluster or regional cluster, you can share resources, you can share the house manager, the house mother, you can start buying food and things in bulk and get better prices. So the whole thing really does work by setting up these little local and regional structures.
And is this where they're set up in the UK? Rural agricultural communities, not some mm-hmm. bustling city?
Pretty well both across the UK.
Okay.
We have lots of small towns where the Abbeyfield House is very much, you know, right at the centre of the town. But then we also have quite a few dotted around London, not really bang in the centre of London, but let's say 5, 6, 7 miles out from the centre in some of the suburbs. We've got very successful little Abbeyfield houses in operation.
You mentioned perhaps a other kind of care facility if they were started up in southern Illinois. Do you mm-hmm. see with so many houses opening in so many countries, other things you want to do with the model?
Well, I think it's always sort of something to focus on is adding the dementia side of care to an Abbeyfield house, because I suppose we're always conscious that people have this wonderful experience in an Abbeyfield house, and people refer to it, a lot of our residents, as sort of having almost the best chapter of their life. It really is that powerful an experience for them. And I suppose, as we've done in the UK, really, it's nice to think that they can go on to an Abbeyfield home if they start suffering from dementia. So adding some care provision, particularly dementia these days, because the statistics of people suffering from dementia are rising all the time as people live longer, among other factors. And I think when we feel that if they need it, they could move on to an Abbeyfield care facility and enjoy the same style of care and attention that they get in an Abbeyfield house is an important thing for us to make our international members aware of.
A silly question. Where did Abbeyfield, the name, come from?
It actually comes from a road in London. Our founder was a guy called Richard Cargom, and he was a major in the guards, the famous soldiers you see guarding the Queen with the beefeater hats. And he started off Abbeyfield in 1956 when he came out of the army. And the first house was in a road called Abbeyfield Road in London. And he was sort of thinking, well, what the heck can I call this thing that I'm creating? And he fixed on the idea Abbeyfield after Abbeyfield Road.
Jeff Bossert talking with Davy Cole. You can hear their full interview on our website, will.illinois.edu.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: AgriGold Hybrids, Muhammad, Charles M. Hundley, Champagne, Michael Walker Consulting, Urbana, and Bates Commodities, Normal. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 20th of March, 2013. Today is the first day of spring. It's the vernal equinox, when the Earth's axis is aligned with the center of the sun. Equinox coming from the Latin equus, meaning equal or level, nox, meaning night or darkness, the equinox, a time when day and night are as close to equal as they ever are. For people living equidistant from the equator, either north or south, and a time when gardeners start to come alive. Margaret Atwood wrote, "Gardening is not a rational act. What matters is the immersion of the hands in the earth. In the spring, at the end of the day, you should smell like dirt." It's the birthday of the playwright Henrik Ibsen, born in Skien, Norway, 1828, best known for his play A Doll's House, 1879, the story of Nora stuck in an unhappy marriage in a play that ends with Nora slamming the door and walking out on her husband. Henrik Ibsen, who had a hard time in Norway, described it as a free country peopled by unfree men and women, left Norway in 1864 for a life of self-imposed exile. He had a very hard life abroad, lived in poverty. He and his wife was on the verge of a nervous breakdown in the winter of 1865, became seriously ill, high fever, almost died. And the next spring, his play Brand appeared in Norway. Henrik Ibsen could not even afford to pay the postage to write to his friends telling them how much he was suffering. But then Brand came out in 1866. It got great reviews. The king awarded Ibsen a pension, and he went on to write many plays, including Peer Gynt, A Doll's House, An Enemy of the People, and Hedda Gabler. It was on this day, 1852, that Uncle Tom's Cabin by Harriet Beecher Stowe was published. And it's the birthday in Stamford, New York, 1813, of the dime novelist Ned Buntline. Started out writing cheap dime novels about gangs and violence in New York, and then he went out west and met Buffalo Bill Cody and made up a whole story about Buffalo Bill, wrote a play about him,